Welcome to Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business, where every week you will learn the secrets to running a business without the stress. Here is your host, Angela Council.
Welcome to Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business, where every week we learn the secrets to being in business and living a great life without all of the stress. My name is Angela Council and I'm a stress and lifestyle mentor. And this week I'm joined by a really special guest. Her name is Helen. Now, Helen's going to talk to us about something a little bit different. It's not really about business, running business, or it's not even about personal health. But I really wanted to talk to Helen because Helen is all about health for dogs. And I know lots of our listeners have got dogs out there. And they become part of the family. And this is why I really wanted to talk to Helen, because I know she's absolutely passionate about it. She calls herself the top dog over at Wellbeing for Dogs. And her purpose really is to improve the way we nourish our dogs. And she says it one bowl at a time. And she's a passionate dog lover. She's an advocate for dogs and what they're eating. So welcome to the show, Helen.
Thanks, Angela. It's lovely to be here.
So, as I said, I mean, we normally talk about business or we talk about health for humans and mindset, but I think it's really important that we actually also look at the other part of our families, because, you know, many people, and in Australia, we have so many animal lovers and people that have pets in their family that it's a really vital part of their family. And I mean, we've got a dog and mine will probably start snoring shortly. He's at my feet. We've got an 8-month-old a Labrador pup.
And gorgeous.
I think it is important that we actually make note of the type of foods that we're feeding our dogs, because it's as important for a dog as it is for us. So tell us, how did you get started in all of this stuff?
Oh, gosh, how did I get started? I think it's utter lunacy, actually. Was a stroke of madness. But I'll just backstep one point to say that I think it does relate, because, we know that food is medicine, and I think that when you feed your dog well, you don't have as big an impact on the wallet. So healthy, wealthy is actually fits, because dogs going to the vet is incredibly expensive. So keeping them healthy is a really important part of that, and nutrition.
Vet trips are just, they're unbelievably expensive. And yes, we want to keep our dogs healthy so that they can enjoy being part of the family. And I mean, people to even take their dogs to work today, these days. So, I mean, yep. I do, but that's because I work at home.
Well, it's actually shown incredible positive effect having dogs in the workplace. Mm. It's very interesting. As you know, the sick leave goes down. Everybody, not just the dog owner, the happiness quotient goes up. So, yeah, there's lots of reasons to have dogs in the workplace
They're
as well.
They're very calming, aren't they?
They are. And I think it's not just calming too. I mean, calming's great, but it kind of opens our heart a little bit. And that probably brings me back to why I do this, why I started, if you like. Because I think that the big factor in why we have dogs in our lives, in the 21st century anyway, is that we're really starved of that ability to nourish and nurture in life. We live in a very insular world. We often, single or the whole concept of the extended family now is, it's foreign to most of us. So many, I think it's 25% of households are single people households. And I think that's very alienating for us. So dogs nourish us. They really nourish our hearts and open them up to lots of, the joy of being in the moment. So I guess for me, it's like, it's a very long journey, but all these things about, like, how do dog lovers best relate to their dogs? How can they really kind of reward that relationship? So I started because my background's in research, and I saw this, this drive or this trend back a long time ago about how we bring dogs into the home. And for me, it was about we've done all these things to bring to make dogs part of the family, but we still feed them really pretty much like livestock. And they're not livestock. They're actually, fur kids. They're part of our family. So my goal was to try and normalize food, normalize how we best, nourish them, how we can look after their health, and how we can give them, you know, share our bounty, if you like. So that's a kind of a digression, but we are going to digress, aren't we? What was the question again, Angela?
I think that was it. How do you get into doing what you're doing? So just share with me, I mean, there's so many commercial pet foods out there. What's wrong with commercial pet food?
Yeah. Look, that's a really good question, because people, where we think we're doing the right thing and the vets tell us this is the right thing to do. And I think that the problem with pet food is primarily, to me, it's primarily that it's a highly processed food. It doesn't matter how fancy or how expensive it is, it's still by definition highly processed. And Angela, you know, if you feed your children a highly processed food, they're not going to have a long, healthy life. It actually impacts on the consumer, on the eater of the processed food, very badly. That, you know, it really is a it's driven by convenience. So, you know, for instance, there's no water in it, or there's 10% moisture, and that's really an economic thing, you know, because you don't transport water around because it's expensive, so you dehydrate it. But actually, even rehydrating the food before you serve it is a powerful step to improving that nutrition. So, you know, I mean, the list is, I can go on for a bit about this one, but I don't bag it, because it's really, you know, we live in a really, you know, we're busy, we're time poor, where, you know, convenience is a major factor in our lives. So it's really, how do we improve what we're doing? How can we better it? So, you know, you can rehydrate dried food, and that actually makes it at least that impact better.
Yeah, I can remember not so long ago, we looked after someone else's dog, and they just basically turned up with this big box of dried food and said, give her 2 cups of this for breakfast and 2 cups for dinner. And I went, oh, do you want it wet down? They went, no, just give it to her dry. And I'm thinking, how do you know the dog's actually going to drink enough water to rehydrate that? And because it was actually quite funny, because there was 2 Labradors, my Labrador and the other Labrador, and because mine's on a raw food diet.
Yeah.
Because, like, they used to get fed. It was like, okay, whose dinner do we want to eat?
I bet that was the question.
And mine was scoffing his food down so fast. I've never seen him eat so fast, because he didn't want this other dog to take it, because he kind of looked at it and went, I'll eat mine.
Yeah, look, I really think that is a problem. And you see, even that quantity that you're talking about, so if you rehydrate that to make it up to what's considered to be the normal hydration of food, which is basically 70% moisture, then you'd add, for every cup, you add 2 cups of water. So if you think about that quantity of food, you're giving the dog 4 cups a day multiplied by 2 is 16, is that? Whatever it is, 12. I don't know. I have to get a calculator.
Maths isn't your strong point. Not mine either.
No, not at this hour. Need more coffee. But the point being that's an awful lot of food, and we think, and I think it really contributes to obesity. And that's the biggest problem that's facing dogs, because the whole idea of it doesn't look like very much food until you put the moisture into it, and then you go, wow, that's a lot of food. So, and I think if you looked at that as a rehydrated, you'd actually be surprised, astounded at it. And I think it does contribute to obesity. But if you come back to that point, you're quite right. How do you know the dog's going to drink enough to rehydrate it? Well, it's not, basically. The water's going to come from somewhere, from its kidneys, from gut. So it actually has a big impact as it goes down the system as well. And we can talk about, you know, the perils of pet food and how to improve it. There's a little blog on my website that gives the 5 ways to improve a dry food diet or a pet food diet. And the second part of that is that there isn't anything live in it, as you probably know. It's a dead food.
Yeah.
And so that also creates a problem. So even adding more fresh food into the diet is great. But perhaps if we could, I'm not quite sure whether we continue talking about the perils of dry food.
Talk about whatever you want. Well, you know, okay, so, you know, from, yes, I know that people look at me and they say, my God, you give your dog probably a pretty good meal. But what is the good, what's the best stuff to feed dogs? My dog gets, he gets lots of raw chicken bones, he chews bones, he gets vegetables, gets bone broth. I've also put some barf in there. He gets leftover dinners. You know, like, that's kind of what, he doesn't eat that much different to what we eat. Yeah. So, you know, and I put a bit of, I think I've put brown rice in there sometimes. So what's a good diet for a dog? Because a dog needs nutrients as much as humans need nutrients.
Yeah. Look, I think this is another field that's kind of been hijacked a bit, in my view. So when you take, and it's really, it's quite, this is a bit of a long story, but forgive me.
That's just all right.
Complicated. When you start talking about food, you get complicated, don't you, really? Although it should be simple. So with what do dogs need? What do really dogs really need in their diet? Well, you're quite right. They do need a variety of foods, and they do have different needs to humans, but not hugely. They've been living alongside us. Look, the conjecture is somewhere between 15 and 25,000 years, which is a very long time. They're the first species that we ever really domesticated. Although some might argue they domesticated us.
I'm not quite sure. That's right. And not very well, I would say, for some people.
That's right. So they've been eating what we eat or what we don't eat for a very long time. So to me, that's the basic common sense of it. They eat what we eat or what we don't eat. So, what I mean by what we don't eat is what we've got left over. And so I think that is that's the natural progression of life with dogs for millennia. And pet food is only quite a recent phenomena. And I think really what happened in the start of our modernity and, affluence and such is that we started feeding them a too rich a diet and not enough variety, not enough leftovers, not enough bones. And it still occurs today. People think, the best diet for a dog is fillet steak, and that's it, really, because they're, inverted commas, carnivores. But actually, dogs like us have evolved to be, they're called facultative carnivores. So they're adapted carnivores. So they have teeth that are suitable for grinding, for instance, where the cat is just a tear and swallow. So from that point of view, they are adapted to live with us. We can call them an omnivore, because you can actually have a vegetarian dog. You can't have a vegetarian cat, but you can adapt a dog's diet to be vegetarian. So you can see it's like humans. They have a really, really wide range of diet that can be adapted. Now, I'll just make a point here. If you want to do a vegetarian diet, it's actually complicated, and don't do it alone. But, it's kind of giving that idea that like us, they're part of, I think, their success as a species is that they are so adaptive in their diet. Cats aren't adaptive. They really should be fed a pure meat and bone diet, whereas dogs are like, what are you having? Yeah?
Except for the lettuce. To find a dog that will eat lettuce. They always seem to spit that out.
if you put it through the Bamex, it's probably not.
That's right. I put, because I do all my veggies up in the Thermomix. I chop them up pretty small. So he gets kale in there, because the kids won't eat kale, but the dog will.
Oh, look. Goodness gracious, you've got to teach your kids better.
They'll pick the kale out going, I'm not going to eat that. I'm not going to eat that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Look, actually, I find kale very interesting, because dogs actually don't mind it. Even my fussy little things doesn't mind it, because
like
it doesn't.
They like the chewy spine.
Yeah. You've got a Labrador.
Yeah, that's right.
That's different. They're very easy to feed. I've got this 3.6 kilo toy poodle, for goodness sake. Who's not food motivated? I've got the opposite end of their continuum.
I can't understand a dog not being food motivated, not with what I've got right now.
Exactly. It makes it quite difficult, actually. But it does teach me a lot. So what does a dog need in their diet was the question, wasn't it?
Yes.
We digress yet again. So I think what happened was that we became too affluent. And a dog's presented with a lot of issues, a lot of dietary issues, which were based on not having a wide variety of diets. So I think that gave pet food companies a leg up, as it were, because they could come to the vet and say, look, I cover all their needs, recommend this, and you're safe. The dog won't be coming in with... So people feeding their dog, their cat or their dog, just all liver, for instance, or so the dog will get hypervitaminosis or whatever it's called. Vitamin A, but and also missing out on not enough calcium, so you're getting deformed growth. So all these problems come because the vet then has to know how to formulate the diet. We're giving them, you know, too much good food and too much of the what we think is good. So I forgot the question again.
The best thing to feed your dog.
Oh, okay, sure.
You're getting there.
So my point here is, I don't deride the raw diet at all. Dogs need raw bones. If they're not having raw bones, they need some form of calcium in their diet. But when I started this research, I started my entry into this by saying, I'm going to make a nutritionally complete, that is, meets the AFCO profile, which is the industry standard for pet food, for commercial pet food, and there's another body called the Nutrient Requirements of Canine. So I'm going to meet these requirements from an all-human food diet, all-human food meal, which actually, it should be quite simple, but it was actually much more complicated than you can think, because if you think about it, there's nothing that we eat that's complete, is there? I mean, even baby formula is probably the only thing that we ever make that we try and say is complete, and that's actually full of, you know, vitamins and synthetic vitamins. And so, you know, your baby food isn't, you know, it's just, you know, you feed them apple one day and pear the next, you know, or whatever that might be. So actually it's more complicated than it sounds, because pet food industry, each pellet is just, it's what they call calories with a vitamin premix in it. So it's really, they really think about it as how many calories should the dog be getting, and then underneath that, what are the amino acids, what are the vitamins, what are the minerals, what are the fats they need. So they, you know, they don't really think of it as food, they think of it as a calorie. So when I started out on that journey, I went through the food, and I think we developed meals, but then had to cross-analyze them over this massive spreadsheet that we've developed that really looks at the complete profile of all these ingredients, which is incredibly complicated, as you can imagine. But successfully so. So I developed a range of meals that we had to use some synthetic vitamins, and not very much, mostly because of deficiencies in the soil, like zinc and such. It was very difficult to get those levels up, but I'd probably look at it differently now. That was developed to be a commercial product, and although we had it was commercially, you know, available, we really just never quite got to the scale that we needed to make it profitable. And I was probably a bit ahead of my time there, Angela, but it's so I had to actually park that. And from that research, I developed a mix that's kind of, it looks a little bit like a dukkha, actually.
Yes, I've seen it.
Yeah. So you sprinkle that on, and that takes care of the things that are usually low or missing. So we'll come back to what's usually low or missing when we talk about diet. So that's the research I did, and that's why I developed that product. And the point of that product then is to say, well, if whatever you're feeding your dog, if you're feeding them, which my preference is to feed them like you feed yourself, given that you don't eat leftover pizza and McDonald's every day, if you have a healthy diet.
If you're eating a healthy diet, otherwise don't feed your dog what you should eat.
In fact, what I find really interesting is when I get people that actually don't have a healthy diet start making food for their dog, they often improve their own diet as well, because you've got to have some broccoli and some kale and some carrot and some sweet potato and some meat and some whole grains. You know, so you're actually buying this because you're going to make that for dinner for the dog. So you make
it. Eat it yourself. Make the meatloaf for yourself.
That's right. So the problem then becomes, when you talk about nutritionally complete food, as you can imagine, that creates a problem. So a normal diet, if we ate the kind of variety that we really should eat in our diet, us humans, that is. So you probably know this. I mean, back in, you know, I don't know how many years ago, but certainly pre-industrialized food, you know, our normal plate would have 40 to 50 different foods in a day, and now we're down to 6 or 7. Yeah. So to me, that becomes the problem. How do we get that variety into ours? And if that variety was in our food, it's probably going to be in the dog, as well as their calcium-phosphorus ratio need, but that's a different story. So so what does the dog need in a diet? Well, my thing is that there's a little ebook you can download on the website that really gives you a, sets out, well, it's not that little, it's now 30 pages, but anyway, it's actually quite fast and easy to read. That really sets out the, you know, the protein, vegetables, carbohydrates and fats. Yeah, so that's the basis of the diet. That they need that kind of variety, in my view, because each of those things, as you know, delivers different nutrients. Mm. So that's the kind of macronutrient diet. And then if you want to look at what do they need underneath that, well, you want to make sure that they're getting their calcium-phosphorus ratio right, which means raw meaty bones that they're getting. Now, as you probably know, I mean, you're with a holistic vet and they're more adaptable to that, but there's a lot of controversy about bones, actually, because they do cause problems. It doesn't matter how, you know, there's a lot of dogs end up with obstructions or with problems from bones. So, you know, it isn't without controversy, but, and I have my little poodle at the moment isn't tolerant of them, so that's also a problem. So she just vomits or comes out the other end as jelly. So, you know, there's a lot of problems with bones, but you actually have to make sure that they do get that calcium ratio right.
Yeah.
And it's vitally important with puppies. So then there's a lot of other things. So are you putting liver into the diet or some kind of, because liver, I mean, I look at all the superfoods and what they deliver. So that's where you get into, this is the complication of the formula. So they do need a higher vitamin A level than humans. They have a high tolerance of it. Are you getting the essential fatty acids into their diet? So omega-3s and 6s, the good 6s, are they coming into the diet? I have a lot of grounds, nuts and seeds in the mix because they, as you probably know, they're like little buds of sunshine, I reckon, seeds and nuts, and they just deliver so beautifully on minerals. So our soils are deficient in zinc and selenium. So there's pepitas and sesame seeds in there that are really high levels of zinc, as well as Brazil kernels, which are high levels of selenium. So you try and kind of find ways of boosting those things that are low or missing in normal homemade diets.
I would imagine that omega-3s would be hard to get into dogs' diets normally.
Look, I think it depends. I'm a big fan of green leafy vegetables and grass-fed animals. If you're eating an animal, eat a grass-fed animal.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that view of they are, well, we are what they eat, but we are what they eat. Yes, yeah. Right. So when you have a grass-fed or range-fed beast, they actually have a better omega-3 ratio anyway. That's why the omega-3 diet is so good, because they're foraging. So chickens foraging actually have a better omega-3 ratio. So it's trying to actually have that in. And green leafy vegetables also have omega-3 in them. So there's lots of ways that you can get omega-3 in. I'm not a big fan of fish oil, simply because we just harvest so much from the sea and we're taking fish and just extracting their oil, for goodness sake. And then, I know, it's terrible waste, you know. So my thing is to eat more things that have omega-3 in them. So, you know, whether that's, so this flaxseed meal is in the mix, for instance, and a good quantity of that, because dogs can convert that. So it's kind of like, you know, it's there's lots of ways of getting that ratio better. That's what we're trying to do, not actually just fill them up with omega-3. We're actually trying to get a better ratio in their diet.
So what would be your three top tips that you want to share with our listeners on how they can, no matter where they are now, even if they are on commercial foods, what are the three things that they could do that would improve the nutrient levels of the food that they're feeding their dogs?
Well, it's, top three tips. top three. I think each meal, if every meal that you feed your dog, you can, we didn't talk at all about cats, but anyway.
I don't really like cats.
Okay.
I'm a dog person. I'm not a cat person.
I'm a dog person too, but you know, cats are animals too, aren't they? You know?
They are. You've got to feed them well as well, but
yeah, you do actually. So for my, the biggest tip I would have is each bowl that you feed your dog, try to make it better for them. So whether that's a commercial diet, so that tip would be within that to try and improve that. So by improving it, by hydrating it, you don't have to let it soak up and get all mushy and such, the dog probably won't eat it. But even just making it wet with stock, as you say, a bone broth or just anything you can do to improve each bowl, just have a little think about it. I'd say the second thing is that when you're making your own food, really consider making extra. So my thing is intentional leftovers. So it doesn't have to be fillet steak, but it can be, you know, even the vegetables that you're making, actually adding extra of those, mashing them up and putting them amongst the food is a really great idea. And for me, the third thing is as best you can, make that transition to a real food diet. So, you know, each step that you take towards it will actually, every step that you can make, every bowl that you give your dog of food will actually improve both their health, their well-being, their longevity, their vitality. You know, it's just the effect is marvelous. But actually, I think the best thing is, and you probably know this, you know, if you really make a full transition to a homemade diet, cooking what you eat, the happy dance is really worth it. You know, watching the dogs go, wow, dinner time, I'm so happy.
Own a Labrador, because that will happen no matter what you do.
That's right. Well, if you've got a regular dog, they do. They love it when you get out the pan, so it's dinner time. They know the smells. They know all the things. And, of course, my thing is the well-being essentials can be used on commercial diet as well. It's really designed for that homemade diet. But yeah, adding a really good basic supplement to the diet is a really good way of enhancing their long-term health.
Now, we do need to mention, though, if people are feeding their dogs leftovers, they do have to be careful of foods that have got garlic and onion in it, don't they?
Well, look, there's quite a few furfies out there about
what's
bad for dogs. Yeah, because it's actually, now, garlic and onions aren't, it's a matter of quantity. So, you know, if you're, let me put it this way, how much does your dog weigh?
Oh, about 25 kilos. He's a big dog.
So your dog would need to eat between 500 and 750 grams of onion for that to be a problem.
Okay, so he'd have to clean the barbecue plate off, which he would do.
Exactly. So the problem with garlic and onions is not garlic and onions in normal cooking quantities, in the things that we might put in ourselves. It's actually when they do clean off the barbecue plate. Or we've got or they get into, you know, some kind of waste product. So if you're having your normal cooking, it's got normal amounts of onion and garlic in it, not a problem. In fact, you know, it's the little Japanese dogs, for some reason, Japanese breed dogs have more problems, and that's even 15 grams per kilo. So if you think between 15 and 30 grams per kilo of body weight, that's another bit of maths, but, you know, that's where it gets into to be a problem. And still, toxicity is one thing, but, you know, mortality, there's it's not that often that onions actually kill dogs. So they might make them a bit sick, but, you know. So watch the barbecue, watch the leftovers, yeah. You know.
And that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Just being aware of what your dog is eating and, you know, if you have a Labrador, keep your couches out of the way, because they'll eat that too.
They do have a tendency, don't they? But yeah, look, I think again the ebook has a list of what dogs can't eat, which is, and there's very few that they really can't eat. Chocolate's probably the big no-no, and the darker the worst. And there's a new product, it's old, but xylitol has been,
yes.
Is really, really toxic. So you just have to watch that you're not buying stuff with xylitol into the house, really. Yes, I recommend that you just don't bring it in.
Yes. Yeah. So you've mentioned the ebook a couple of times. Where can people get a copy of this ebook?
That's on the website. There's an ebook under resources. There's an ebook to download. So that's free. You just need an email address in there, but it's free to download.
What's your website address?
Oh, sorry, you need that, don't you?
It helps.
It's wellbeingfordogs.com.au.
Okay, so everyone who wants to find out more about how to feed their dogs a healthier diet, go over to wellbeingfordogs.com.au. You'll be able to download that ebook. I've read the ebook. It's really great. There's also some really great recipes in there. There's a meatloaf in there that I could feed my children and my dog all at once. And because that's one of the big things that, because I've grown up with dogs my whole life, but it's only for the last 10 years or so, we haven't had a dog. as when my children were younger, and we've got one now. And one of the biggest things that I missed when I didn't have a dog is not having anything to feed the leftovers to.
That's right.
Because, you know, particularly when you've got young children, because they always have leftovers. Yeah, and now it's trying to train the kids not to put things into the compost, but rather to feed it to the dog. Because, okay, if it's dropped on the floor and you don't want to eat it, it's okay for the dog. Because I have a big bowl that's got his veggies and everything chopped up. Just chuck it in there and I'll just mix it in with his dinner. He's fine. You know, so we don't need to throw all this food away and compost it when we actually have a walking composting machine that always wants more food. And that's it, you know, feeding leftovers. I don't have to have leftovers anymore because I can just chop it all up, mix it. You know, I put everything through the Thermomix. I just put it all through there, mix it up. I use bone broth a lot to moisten stuff up. Yep. And that gets added to whatever meat or whatever he's got, and he's got all the veggies and all in there. And I have to say, quite often people will come up to me and comment on the state of his coat because he has a gorgeous shiny coat all the time. And I believe that's because of the type of diet he's being fed.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it makes a difference. It really does.
So just before you go, I've got a little bit of a question for you.
Oh, no. Oh, yes.
No. Just a little bit of fun.
Okay.
Who is your celebrity crush and why? It's going to be a dog owner for sure.
No, actually, it's probably Jamie Oliver.
Oh, does he have a dog?
Because he doesn't. I don't know if he does have a dog, but I'd love to I've got a crush on him because I really, really love the way he's normalizing food for people.
Yes, yeah.
So my thing is I like to refer to myself as the Jamie Oliver of the dogs because really no meal for a dog should take more than a few minutes more on whatever you're doing. And that's my whole thing. If you're cooking dinner, cooking something for the dog, a couple of minutes more. So Jamie Oliver and his 15-minute meals. Awesome. I love him. I also love all the work he does with kids and schools. And because to me, that's so much similar to the pet food industry. It's a similar, it's not, that sounds awful, but kids and dogs, you can't really compare.
No, but what you're talking about, the fast food, the processed food, is.
Yeah, that's right. So he's my big crush. I'd love talk to him about how we can actually help improve dogs and through that, improving humans' diets.
Because it all goes together, doesn't it?
You know,
we're eating better, our dogs are eating better. As you said right at the beginning, it does save us money in the long run because we don't have all these medical and vet bills. We have more fun rather than having, you know, a dog that's sick and, you know, has arthritis as it starts to get older and things like that. It's like, you know, we can enjoy all of our parts of our lives and take our dog to work and have fun and... all that type of stuff.
All that stuff and dogs bring it. They bring us so much joy. They really do.
And then when they come up and give you a big sloppy lick and or you just put on. I had some photos done the other day, and I had a white shirt on. We decided to take some photos with the dog, and because he'd been out the back, he loves to dig holes. So he came out and he just decided to come and give me a big hug all over my white shirt, and I had this mud all over it. Okay, fine. We might need to change the shirt.
Look, that's probably your best shot ever.
Actually, they came out really, really well, so we kind of covered up, like the photographer would just kind of, I'm hoping, Photoshop out the mud marks. But he was having fun.
Like with dogs, it's definitely messy.
That's right.
Definitely messy.
I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to thank our listeners, and hopefully you enjoyed that and learned a little bit more about nutrition for dogs, because it's really, really important, just like nutrition for humans is important. It is important that we feed our, not just dogs, our cats, all of our animals, because we are all, basically, we're all part of the same ecosystem of nature, and nature provides everything that we require, whether or not you're walking on 2 feet or you're walking on 4. So if you enjoyed that, if you've got any questions about anything that was discussed today, please pop over to the website www.angelacouncil.com and leave a comment, and we'll get back to you if you've got any questions. And if you love the episode and you want to hear more, then go over to iTunes and subscribe, and then every single week you'll get another interview pop into your phone so you can have a listen to us while you're over there. Please leave a 5-star rating, because I love those 5-star ratings, and that also means that iTunes continues to push this out to people. And until next week, where we can talk more about health, wealth and wise in business, see you later. Infinite love and gratitude. Bye for now.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business. I hope you enjoyed it. Why not pop over to my website, angelacouncil.com, and do your stress quiz to find out how stress is affecting you in your life. Looking forward to speaking to you again next week. Bye for now.